Human trafficking is not only a problem in second and third world countries. In fact, you can find it right in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. Couple trafficking with child sex offenders, and you've got a serious problem. Among the missions for the U.S. Marshals Service is one called the Interdiction for the Protection of Children. For how it all works, Dr. Michael Bork, the Marshals' chief psychologist, spoke with Federal News Radio's Eric White.
The Marshals Service has been involved in the missing children mission for some time. We had recent legislation passed that gave us the authority to assist state and local and tribal partners when a child is abducted or is an endangered runaway or otherwise goes missing, and we're able to assist our fellow law enforcement officers in trying to rescue that child, hopefully before he or she comes to harm. Recently, about 2 years ago, we started getting involved with the Texas Department of Public Safety, and they were in the process of creating a program called the Interdiction for Protection of Children program. And this program is designed to train police officers, whether troopers or municipal police officers, in recognizing signs of child exploitation on the side of the road. So, for example, during a routine traffic stop.
So what are some of those indicators that you've taught police officers to look for?
Yes, so there's eight different categories of indicators that we train the police officers to recognize, and these include behavioral indicators, both of any adults who may be in the vehicle as well as the minors who may be at risk. We look at physical characteristics, and that could include dress or tattoos and other observable indicators. And again, that's either the potential perpetrator, the individual who poses a high-risk threat to children, or to a child who is at risk. And then we look at the property, so things that are in the vehicle or things that may be on the person. Finally, we look at some characteristics of the vehicles and some patterns, such as the types of roads they're traveling and things like that. And so we put all of these things together, and what in essence does is it allows the officers to have a different lens through which they're viewing that stop. And so in the past, let me put it this way, in the past, the police officers have received quite a bit of training on recognizing signs of impaired driving or recognizing signs of human smuggling across the border, for example. And there's different aspects to the vehicles and the ways the vehicle might be listing to the side, or a panel of the car might look different than the others. Perhaps there's drugs being smuggled. So these are things that an officer with a sharp eye will be able to recognize as being anomalous and perhaps problematic. But typically, the officers in the United States were never trained to look for signs of child exploitation in the same way. They really didn't know how to distinguish between a 13-year-old girl who was going to visit her grandma's house in a nearby city from a 13-year-old girl who was being trafficked.
Dr. Michael Bork is chief psychologist for the Sex Offender Investigations and Behavioral Analysis Unit with the U.S. Marshals Service. So you've mentioned that you worked with Texas authorities. What other federal agencies do you all do a lot of work with? Is it FBI mostly or DHS as well?
We really work with every other law enforcement agency, whether federal, tribal, state, local. The Marshals Service has a long history of working in a task force model or working collaboratively with our partners. And this program and our missing child mission is no different. Really, if any of our children went missing, I think it's fair to say we would want every law enforcement officer in the nation to be looking for our kids, if not internationally. We certainly don't exclude anyone from the partnerships that we need to take action, and to take action very quickly. So for some of these, for some of the programs, there might be more of an influence from, let's say, the Department of Homeland Security or the Federal Bureau of Investigation or particular state police agencies. If it's a state operation, we would assist, the state highway patrols, state troopers. There's been a lot of collaboration recently with some tribal entities and our international colleagues. This is a transnational crime. This is a crime that doesn't really care about borders. In fact, you know, many children are trafficked into the United States from other nations, as well as adults. So because this is a multinational and transnational crime, the best way to tackle it is by working collaboratively with our partners around the globe.
And how many people are in your unit, and are they mostly made up of people in your profession, psychologists, or are they law enforcement?
So the behavioral analysis unit is a small unit, and it's comprised primarily of clinical psychologists. But in the past, we've hired other disciplines as well. We've had criminologists and epidemiologists and forensic scientists and different perspectives to bring to the crime types that we might work. We work some cold cases and child homicides, but our primary focus is on sex crimes and identifying, locating, and apprehending non-compliant sex offenders. So these are men and women who are supposed to be on the sex offender registries but have chosen to abscond or stay unregistered for whatever reason. And it's the Marshal Service has a mission to go after and find those people and bring them back to justice.
And a fairly new world to this is the cyber world. Ashton Kutcher was in the news recently talking about the dark web and the aspect that that plays into this whole area. What kind of work do you all do in the cyber world?
So the Marshal Service actually does more of a supportive role rather than a primary investigative role online. There are other agencies that do an excellent job. The FBI and HSI do fantastic work, and there's other agencies as well. So our mission is more on the ground rather than in the cyber world. So we would do more of the identifying and locating the fugitives that would be involved and bringing them back in front of a judge. But we don't do too much of the investigations online.
So if we're getting into the mind of a sex offender, what are some misconceptions and things that you notice investigating into these people? And, you know, is there a way that you guys sort of explain the psychology of a child molester or any other sort of sex offender?
Right. So those of us in the behavioral analysis unit have a lot of experience working with sex offenders. Collectively, we have about two decades of work with some of the most dangerous sex offenders in federal custody. And so we have we're able to draw on that experience to understand, as you put it, to understand the mind of these men and women and how they tick, and to conduct accurate risk assessments about what harm they may pose to our nation's vulnerable populations. But we do engage in some profiling and assisting the field with understanding these men. I think the biggest myth is probably that those individuals who download child abuse images, such as child pornography or other exploitation material, that those men are somehow different from the individuals who commit hands-on acts of child molestation. And this is simply not true. There is a very strong correlation between people who download this material and look at this material and people who are actually acting out on those impulses or those fantasies. So this is sometimes seen even in courtrooms where this is presented as if these are two different mindsets or two different predilections, when in fact they're really just adjunctive behaviors. They're just different manifestations of the same drive. I think the other misconception is that most individuals who are involved in sex crimes, particularly sex crimes against children, have been abused themselves. And this is probably the greatest myth that I encounter, is the assumption that most people have had a childhood that's characterized by child sexual abuse. And the most robust studies out there, the most rigorous studies out there, really consistently show that that number is well under 20%, and it could be as low as 10%, and that's not much higher than the general population.
Anything else that you want to touch on that we didn't get along to and you want the audience to know about?
No, I just would probably encourage parents to visit the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. There's a variety of resources that would assist with keeping your child safe online and maintaining some healthy boundaries with your kids online and offline, and just making sure that your child is safe. And there's all sorts of resources, both for children and for parents, to ensure that that our kids are protected.
Dr. Michael Bork is chief psychologist at the U.S. Marshals Service. Find more information and a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.